Hello, and welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. I'm going to sound pretty sick, and I may cough, but I could at least try to edit those out. I got this, like, con crud, like, not at the con, but coming back, and I just can't get over it, man. And right now, it's like at a cough, and it's really nasty. But I'm going to try to keep this one sweet and short, and So this was for the week of October 5th, 2015 to October 11th, 2015. And during that week, I had read quite a bit of books. It was a total of 40, but there were a lot of series. In other words, I went to the box of to read, and I grabbed several books out of a particular title. So it wasn't a lot of titles, it just was a lot of quantity of books. So it was a heavy DC week, but we had 31 DC comics. I was in the mood for it. I'm going through a phase right now where I just want to read DC. I don't know what's going on. We had IDW, we had one. We had one Image and seven Marvel. So we're going to start at the bottom. There were no... just to go over the reviews again, it was 5, I love it, 4 is I really like it, 3 out of 5 is I like it, and 2 out of 5 is I did not like it, and 1 is I hated it. It's pretty much the Netflix reviews. So, at the bottom, we had a 3 out of 5 with Samurai Blood, and it could have been a higher rating maybe. But it was a long, 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 long time since I read Samurai Blood number 5. I think it is almost a year, maybe even over a year that I read it. So picking it up, I was able to remember some key plot points. But it is a like a samurai story from Image Comics that that revolved around revenge. Let me look it up real quick. Samurai Blood. A cup of tea, a cookie, and you. Samurai. I can't find the fucking thing. Okay, Samurai's Blood came out in 2001. Or no, so 2011. And, it was by Owen Wiseman, and the artist was Name Kim. It was a very, like, animated style of art. And, like I said, it was like three teenagers have to make their way to find their destinies. And it's in a world of samurai where they have to take revenge on people that have messed up their clan. So, yeah, it was a decent story. The covers are really nice. Number 6 had a pretty nice cover. And I think I would have enjoyed it more, like I said, if I had read it closer together. So that's Samurai Blood. Next, we had Earth 2 Society, number 4. This pretty much dealt with, like, flashbacking to the relationship between Power Girl and the Earth 2 Superman. And there was like some good story there, but it didn't accomplish a hell of a lot. So that's why I thought it was a 3 out of 5. It didn't really move the needle, just barely in the story. But it was good at what it did. It didn't move very far. And then also a 3 out of 5 was Hawkman, the third series. This was the Hawkman that was the Avatar. He actually had hawk eyes and long hair, and he had that blade that he would pull off his back. Made him look a lot like Wolverine. This series was really, really good in certain points. And then Christopher Priest came to, like, close it out. And his series was... He took, like, some of the major plot points and tried to wind them down in issue 31, which I didn't read this week. And then in 32 and 33, they were kind of like a tie-in with the Justice League of America, which was like the Gerald Jones era of Justice League. It was a real weird Justice League. They had this, like, Oberon blue bird creature, and Obsidian and Nuklon and Martian Manhunter and Wonder Woman. And at this time, the Justice League Task Force was going on at the same time. And Hawkman was going nuts. And Martian Manhunter said he'd help him out. He brought him upon the satellite. He gave him a Justice League Task Force uniform to suppress his powers. And then he also tried to go into his mind and actually sucked in the avatars, and he went nuts, and craziness ensued. And then it ended really weird. Like, Hawkman actually looked like he died. And we don't really know if he's dead or not. You know, there was no body, but it looks like he's gone the way of the dodo. But that was the Hawkman of the 90s. It was a pretty good run. It had 33 issues and I think an annual or two. I'll look it up real quick just so you could get an idea of what. So the first series was 1964 to 1968. And then following that series, it became Hawkman and the Atom. And then you had Hawkman, which was 1986 to 1987. And then you had a series from 1993 to 1996. And that's the third series that I read. It started off with William Messner. Well, actually, John Ostrander started the series with Jan Buscema. And Steve Leiber did some, and Luke McDonald. There was a lot of different artists on the book. Steve Leiber did a lot of the artwork. And Messner Loebs wrote a lot of it, too. And then towards the end, there was this really good two-issue arc by Pat McGreal. I don't know who he did it, but it was really good. But before this, too, was the Hawkman stuff. Hawkworld, excuse me, the Tim Truman Hawkworld and the Hawkworld series. So that was like in between there. And then in 2002 to 2006, we had the fourth Hawkman series, which was the Geoff Johns that ended with Palmiotti and Gray. It was probably the most solid Hawkman has ever been. And in my opinion, they should never have changed it, the New 52, because it was heading towards greatness. And then you had the Savage Hawkman, which was the New 52. It wasn't bad. It just wasn't at this caliber. It's like they took the best Green Lantern and the Batman and says, we're going to fix all the other franchises. Well, Hawkman, at this point, he was not broke. He was at his peak. So they should have done the same thing with Hawkman, in my opinion. But I rambled, and I'm trying to keep this short. I'm always in trouble because I fucking ramble a lot. For Mighty W, we're going to enter the 4 out of 5s. And this one I liked a lot better than it was the Shrinking Man from IDW. This is the adaptation of the book, and there was a movie called The Shrinking Man. It came out around the time that Ant-Man launched because it was going to take advantage of a guy that's shrinking. But in this one, he actually went through this mist on a boat and simply inhaled this substance, and he started to shrink really small, and he's really like a little boy right now, and he's getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And he ended up going to the circus with his wife and child. And he looks like a little boy. And she's like, stay in the car, don't go anywhere. Well, he actually leaves and ends up at the freak show. And he falls in love with like Tom Thumb's ex-wife. So it was pretty entertaining. It's really depressing at the same time because you see the devolution. You see him devolving and getting smaller and smaller and shrinking and shrinking. And there's a lot of flash forwards and flashbacks. The flash forwards usually have him like fighting insects. Like he's really, really small at this time. And then it'll flash back to where he's struggling with his wife and stuff like that. But it was a good issue. The next issue I didn't buy originally, but they had a dollar. I forget what they call them. Marvel re-releases a lot of their number ones, and it's like their first looks or whatever. And this was the Unbeatable Squirrel Girl. I didn't think I was gonna like it because I looked at the preview art and I was like, I wouldn't enjoy it. But it turned out to be a really fun. It wasn't laugh out loud fun, But it was fun and lighthearted, and it worked on so many levels. And she had a run-in with Craven, which was really interesting. And the thing about Squirrel Girl is she has that title is everybody she's went up against, she has not lost. So she had a really interesting run-in with Craven, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. That was from Marvel Comics, and it was the reprint. And now they're going to re-release it again now that Secret Wars is over, and I am going to be getting it. So the imprint was True Believers, and it's Ryan North, who I've never heard of. And the artist is Erica Henderson, who I don't believe I've heard of either. The art kind of grew on me, but I don't really like it. So after that, we got Secret Wars. I finally got caught up on Secret Wars from Marvel Comics, the current incarnation. It's like the third volume, I believe.
Wow.
It is an enjoyable event, but it seems like it's doing its own thing, and then all the titles that are around it are doing their own thing, and they have a central battle world that they're evolving around. But this is pretty much the story of the Fantastic Four and FF. It's like the continuation of what Hickman left off at. All right. So that's where Jonathan Hickman left off with the FF. I'm losing my voice. So there's a lot of quiet time in this book, and there's a lot of conversations, but the conversations are really quality, the art's quality. There's not a lot of action. I mean, they'll throw in like maybe one scene or two scenes a book, but then it's mostly talking heads. But it is really interesting, and it is a good FF story, and if you like Hickman's FF, I'd recommend Secret Wars. So the next title that we have is Constantine the Hellblazer, and he's been dealing with this being that's been killing all the ghosts that he can usually talk to. And a lot of these ghosts are like his best friends. So he actually, this one had a Vanessa Del Rey art. And she took over this issue from Riley Rossimo. And I love Riley Rossimo. And no disrespect, but man, I like Vanessa Del Rey more. So she showed up, and I really think she knocked it out of the park with the artwork on Hellblazer. So that was another 4 out of 5. And then I finally concluded Aquaman and the Others, which I love this series, and it was kind of hitting at a weird time. But it had a lot of characters that Geoff Johns created, and Dan Jurgens ran with the story. And he told a highly interesting story, and he did what I love in comics is when they are able to build up all the characters and backstories and make you care about all these characters that are the others, and also give you a strong plot point. And it ended really good, and I really thought it was a complete story arc, and I really wish it would continue, because it truly reminded me of like Batman and the Outsiders, and I'm really, really, really gonna miss that. So like you see, I fall behind in a lot of comics, and the reason I bulk read them like this is because I read what I want when I want, and that's not necessarily when it comes out. So I think I get a lot out of my comics because I'm in the mood, or more like in the mood for what I want. So when I consume it, I enjoy it a lot more than if I just said, okay, here's next on the pile. And I had read Aquaman 9 through 11. Concluded that series, and I was like, it was really good. And plus, there was a Futures End issue as well, but I had read that a long time ago. When Futures End came out, it took placement in the future, and I wanted to consume them all in the month that they came out, and I really did enjoy it. So it was a cool DC of September event. We missed out on a September event. Convergence was kind of our early event, and I enjoyed Convergence. It really got shit on, and I don't think it deserves it, but that's me. Then I decided I was in the mood for Arrow, because I wanted to read season 2.5, even though we've already watched season 3. So they're releasing like what happened between season 2 and season 3, and we've already know what happens in season 3. But it was really interesting, and they introduced another character that had taken the serum that Deathstroke did, and it was kind of a build-up of that plot. But there was a lot of other things that went on, and you know, to start setting up season 3, and it did have a death of a member that I don't think happened on the TV. We had lost Bronze Tiger, Ben Turner. He got killed in a Suicide Squad mission in the comic book, so I imagine he'd be dead in the TV show as well. I'm almost done, though. We have Arkham Manor number 2 through 6. This is the end of Batman Eternal, and which led to the Wayne Manor becoming the home of Arkham temporarily until they could get the new asylum built. And it was pretty creepy. There was a killer in the walls, and you never get a name of who this character is. They make you believe a lot of different things about the character, and you don't really know who he is, and even when it ends, you don't really know who. It's like a John Doe, but he's targeting all the inmates and trying to kill them off, and Bruce Wayne goes undercover as an inmate and tries to uncover who that is. And it was a Jerry Dugan story, which he's really killing it with 1872. And then I finished Charles Soule Swamp Thing. And I must say that Charles Soule, when he was at DC, was really knocking it out of the park with Red Lanterns. He came on that book, and it was a good book. But to me, it didn't find its way until Charles Soule took over. And he made it amazing. Well, I had to finish Swamp Thing, which was issues 38 through 40. Which was a battle between the avatars of the green. They had the avatar of the fungus, which was interesting because it would attack the green. And then the Lady of the Weeds used to be part of the green. She would train the avatars and stuff. Well, she eventually evolved to become the avatar for the metal, which is like a, you know, machine-based creatures. And it was an amazing story arc. It was one of my favorite Swamp Thing story arcs. And I'm going back to like Alan Moore and all kinds of different arcs. But again, with this title, you know, I like Jeff Lemire, but that series dragged on a lot, you know, between the Rot, the Red. And this one had the Rot. It had Abby. She's part of the Rot, and they were allies trying to defeat Arcane, and which is the Rot, and the Metal, and a couple of other entities like the Fungus, and it was a really cool story arc. Highly recommend it if you're a Swamp Thing fan. But you have to read like when Charles Soule takes over, because he invents a lot of stuff like hierarchies and within the green and stuff like that, and they really work. And then 4 out of 5 was Jason Aaron. I knew this book was going to be good because it was Jason Aaron. And it is Volume 4 of Doctor Strange from Marvel Comics. It's the re-release. And it was a really good first issue. It introduced the character, gave you backstory. It was a good jumping on point to be reading Doctor Strange. And it sets up the story arc in a really effective way. And Jason Aaron pretty much has a writing style that works really good with my brain. Like, I don't have to think. My brain just absorbs his style very well. And like Matt Kentz and, you know, some of the other guys, Mike Grell. And, you know, it's just like certain things that my brain just likes their storytelling. Well, he really did a good job, and I'm really happy that Doctor Strange has a book now. And I'm hoping it will last at least 25 issues. But he's always been a character that hasn't lasted very long. He had a good run in the Bronze Age, the Silver Age. He kind of didn't have his own title, and then he found his own title, and then it didn't last long, and then He had his Bronze Age title, which is my favorite, by the way. And then where they had the Spirits of Vengeance titles, and they started reinventing all of the magical and dark characters and demon-based characters. He was relaunched again. And now we have this volume, which I hope will last at least 25 issues. And I hope so, because he had a good run with Thor, and then he had another good, but it only lasted 8 issues with the female Thor. And he's still going to be writing Thors after that, so we'll see where it goes. I just hope it finds the fan base. And then we get into the 5 out of 5s. These are the ones that really knocked it out of the park. Journey to Star Wars, The Force Awakens, Shattered Empire, number 2. Takes place after Return of the Jedi. Further develops the X-Wing fighter pilot, the female. And it does it in a way that you start to really care about the character, which I really enjoy. This was Greg Rucka, and he has the artist that worked with him on The Punisher. It's like a really hard name to pronounce. But is beautiful art. Really beautiful art. And it's like they interact with all the characters we know and love, but they're introducing their own thing, so a lot of the focus is on the new characters, which I think is really important, that we learn some foundation for the new movie, and I think this is doing a very good job for that. But I rated number 1 high, and I rated number 2 high, so it's very consistent. Batwing. Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray. This is a 5 out of 5. They made Lucius Fox's son, Batwing, after kind of the African storyline where he was part of Batman Inc. And that is when it truly grabbed me. It really developed like the Fox family, and he has two sisters, and him and his mom and dad, and I really liked it. They introduced a villain that he knew from childhood that captured one of his sisters, got her hooked on drugs, and killed her boyfriend, and drugged her up so bad that she is now brain dead for the most part. You know, they have to really take care of her, the Foxes, but he rescued her. And then he captured his little sister, who's like a genius, and he had to go rescue her. And he had a lot of conflicts with Bruce Wayne, because he's like, Bruce, you know, why can't you help me find my sister? And Bruce was always trying to keep him in line, like, stay in control, don't lose your head, you might kill somebody. But it dealt with like an underground society underneath Gotham, and it was a pretty spooky society. It was ruled by this guy, I think his name was Menace. And it had the Rat Catcher down there as well. And they've had a really weird underground society that is not linking up fairly well, but that was developed in Catwoman by Anna Senti. And it looks like it's a different underground system. But it worked really well. It was very effective. It was very emotional. Even the last issue, the way they ended it, you know, they wrapped up the story arc early, and then they had a story with just him and his sister. And it was an amazing story, and it was just heartwarming that they formed this really cool relationship. So I'd really recommend Batwing, especially when the Palmiotti and Gray start. Even the Judd Winnick stuff is really good. It never was a bad book. It just never caught on. Unfortunately, what they should have did was renumber it when Palmiotti and Gray took over, because it was truly a relaunch. The whole character changed, while the other one kind of retired. And then we had the top pick, which was the top pick last week, is I had wrapped up Thunder Agents Volume 3 from DC Comics. It's the first volume from DC Comics by Nick Spencer and Kafu, and that was a 5 out of 5, and then I jumped immediately. When the New 52 relaunched, there was still the Thunder Agents going on, but it came out as Volume 2, and Volume 4, but it is like Volume 2 of the DC volumes, it was still Nick Spencer, so it like just continued on the story arc. And the thing that's amazing is it links up with the stuff that happened in the Silver Age really, really well. Because there was an underground society that was going to attack the Earth, and we were doing nuclear experimentations below the ground, and we affected and killed a lot of their people, and they just said, fuck this, you know, we outnumber the people above ground, let's go kill them, let's nuke them and see what they think about it. And the Thunder agents had to prevent this from happening. And there's a really cool story because you learn that the Iron Maiden, the main female character, is the Iron Maiden's daughter, and she's kind of the one that you learn to care about. She's like the one that runs, kind of knows everything about Thunder agents, and even keeps secrets by the top brass, you know, of Thunder agents. And then there's the other agent, which has the Mento helmet, and they have to go stop this from happening with the other Thunder agents that they introduced, and they end up losing a couple. But it was really well told and very emotional, and I was so invested in the characters that it makes me want to now finish reading the IDW version and also seek out the back issue magazine Spotlight. It's called The Thunder Agent's Companion, which I subscribe to back issue, but every now and then they have these companions. Like they have the Hawkman Companion, the Blue Beetle Companion, the Batcave Companion, the World of Krypton Companion, you know, those companions. And they have one specially for Thunder agents. And I really want to buy it now because I really want to know the legacy of these heroes. And I'm really vested in them. And Nick Spencer, I blame him. He's the one that made me become in love with these characters. And the two new characters that he introduced are the ones that I really love, which aren't the main Thunder agents. They were amazing. So I'd highly recommend it, and that's it. That is the list. It had 40 comics. Like I said, this was Thunder Agents 1 through 6, Volume 4, Batwing 31 through 34, and Journey to Star Wars, The Force Awakens. Those were my favorite books of that week. Let me know what you think. I also got a cool email from Steven Evers. He just said he's really enjoying the show, the weekly reads. My review of The Thunder Agents convinced him to pick up Volume 1. And I hope he enjoys it as much as I do because I got so invested in it. And I hope it makes him pick up Volume 2 because, like, Volume 1 is kind of where I was at the 4 out of 5. And then I hit Volume 2, I had the issues, but I know what's in Volume 1 and Volume 2. And that's where I just became absolutely hooked, invested, and I hope he continues with that. And he just says he enjoys it because there's a lot of books that are under his radar, and this gives him a broad spectrum of titles to check out. He also asked me if I'm reading Alan Moore's Providence, and he'd like to hear my take on it. Well, that'll be coming up soon because I order everything Avatar. I just haven't gotten to it yet. Matter of fact, you probably heard me in a few episodes ago talking about Alan Moore's Fashion Beast, which was post-apocalyptic fashion. And so I will try to get, and thanks for the email. I mean, that's like the feed, especially with solo podcasts, with the podcasts you do with other people, you have the banter between you and the other person, and it kind of doesn't matter who's listening. But when you're doing solo podcasts, it's just you, and you don't know if anybody else is listening, so it's good to get feedback, and I really appreciate you taking the time, Steven, and letting me know that you're enjoying the show. And like Steven, you could send me email at mike@comicbooknoise.com. I will read your email on the episode, and I'll also answer your question on the episode. The other way to reach me is on Twitter at Mike Myers Brunch. I'll either respond there, or if you're commenting on an episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads, I will likely put it in a future episode of the show as feedback. Also, this is released on the Geek Brunch feed, so you could find us on Facebook at Geek Brunch Podcast. If you click the like there, there's all of the episode threads on there, and you could comment there. Same way, if I get feedback there, I will feed it back to all the listeners that are listening to the show. Let's see what else is there. Got Twitter, got that. Oh, please leave an iTunes review. It's under Geek Brunch Podcast. And if it's specifically for this one, just mention in the write-up, you know, that I know not everybody uses iTunes, but if you do use iTunes, I would really appreciate a review. If you could, under Geek Brunch Podcast, you go there and then just say write a review. And I would really appreciate it. So that's it. I will try to take off all the coughing because I had a lot of coughing in this episode. We'll see you next time. I've already read the books for next time. I just got to record it. So take care and bye-bye.